The World Today. At this time, the Columbia Broadcasting System presents a summary of all the important news in the world today. Reports from CBS correspondents in the major foreign capitals, direct by transatlantic shortwave radio, and the latest developments as received by Columbia's newsroom here in New York. Tonight, John Daly will call in Bob Trout from London for a report on the latest developments as seen in the British capital. We shall also hear from Albert Warner in Washington. And now first, John Daly.
Here is an overall glance at the main developments in the news up to airtime. The latest Russian war communique once again declares the Red Army is fighting on all fronts, but the drive on Moscow has been halted at all points, but gives no details except on the activity of the Soviet Air Force, which apparently is desperately resisting the Luftwaffe in the Moscow region. The Nazis, for their part, claim they've broken the last Russian defense line in the Crimea and assert that their troops besieging Moscow are now within 31 miles of the Soviet capital. British planes have been active most of the day over the Channel, bombing sea and land objectives. Canada's Navy Minister announced that German submarines are operating within sight of the Newfoundland coast. Two have been attacked and one possibly sunk in Belle Isle Channel. The United States and Canadian governments established a joint committee to coordinate the two countries' industries and speed up war production. In Washington, where the committee was announced, the government moved on the labor front. The War Department took over five more branch plants and two warehouses of the Air Associates Company. The OPM indicated a coming settlement of the welders' strike on the West Coast, and a presidential emergency board recommended temporary wage increases for more than 1 million railroad workers. In the Far East, it was announced that the Japanese diplomat who signed Tokyo's pact with the Axis is flying to this country in an attempt to improve relations with the United States. Those are the outstanding developments on the world scene today. Now, a fuller report on the war in Russia. The version from Berlin claims that a Nazi spearhead driving through the Ayala Mountains of the Crimea has reached the shore of the Black Sea. It's declared this movement has penetrated the last natural fortress left to the Russians in the Crimean campaign and has split the Red Army forces into three segments. It's also asserted that the Germans are now in a position to spread out along the coast and take the Soviet positions from the rear. Reports from the Soviet side continue to stress the German drive on Moscow as a more crucial conflict than the fighting in the south. In six sectors, the Nazis are said to be desperately attempting to close in on the capital without significant gains anywhere. It's stressed that the Germans haven't gotten any nearer to Rostov on the Don than they were a week ago. And even in the Crimea, where the Russians admit the situation is extremely grave, the terrain is said to be increasingly difficult for the invaders. So much for the war in Russia as reported in dispatches to New York. Now for a report on the Russian war from London by Bob Trout, we turn to the British capital. Go ahead, London.
London hears that the fighting in Russia is apparently heaviest in the region west of Moscow and in the south. Russian spokesmen say that the Germans are being held, although they're throwing in reserves brought to the eastern front from the occupied country. In other words, we in London haven't heard very much from Russia today. Royal Air Force fighter planes attacked ground targets in northern France today, and the pilots who took part in these attacks described the German anti-aircraft fire from the soil of France as intense. One British pilot said the anti-aircraft fire was heavier than anything he had previously seen. The British have released some figures on the Royal Air Force offensive in the west. The Bomber Command, one of three commands, has dropped more than 10,000 tons of bombs on German-occupied territory in the past 3 months. And the British bomber effort last month is announced as nearly double British bombing in October of last year. This is the end of my second full day in London, and I still don't know just how the air raid siren sounds. It's been more than 3 months since London had a real raid. No one I meet seems to be particularly interested in speculating on when the siren will sound again. But I feel like the man in the story who waited all night for his noisy neighbor upstairs to drop the other shoe. If it would wail just once, if I only knew just how it sounds, I probably wouldn't be listening for it with one ear most of the time. There were some German planes over Britain tonight. Flight activity is reported over southwest England, and bombs were dropped in a coastal area, but there are no reports of casualties or of damage. London is very different, actually, from the photographs and the moving pictures of London at war. It's hard to tell you why. Perhaps it's just the general atmosphere, or perhaps it is just that intangible something that always makes the reality different from the make-believe. The only thing that looks entirely like the pictures is the screen of barrage balloons over the city. The newly arrived visitor looks at them to make sure that this is London, just as the sightseers stepping out of Washington's Union Station stand and stare a moment at the white dome of the Capitol. It's announced here that some of the German bombers now flying over Britain at night are equipped with fenders as a protection against the barrage balloons. These fenders are attached to the nose of the plane to cut through the cables of the balloons if the enemy planes are forced to fly low. The fenders are reported to weigh some 800 pounds of bombing loads carried. The Admiralty announces more British successes against enemy supply ships in the Mediterranean. Three more supply ships sunk, two of them in a convoy escorted by warships. I went to get my ration books today and got one booklet that most Londoners don't yet have. It's for canned foods, which are just beginning to be rationed here and will be controlled on the new point system, which you've already heard about, I know. I'm told that most of these canned foods, for which the new pink booklets are issued, are coming to us from the United States. I'll be able to tell you more about that after I've sampled my first can of baked beans or tuna fish. Can openers have not been rationed. I return you now to Columbia in New York.
From another part of the British Empire, Canada's Navy Minister disclosed today that German submarines are now operating within sight of the shores of Newfoundland, a bulwark in our hemisphere defense. Navy Minister MacDonald's statement was the first official confirmation in Canada that U-boats are so near the coast of this continent. Last night in Canada's Parliament, MacDonald revealed that Canadian warships have already sunk several enemy sea raiders. And when asked to amplify that statement today, the Navy Minister said, and I quote him, "There are submarines right off the coast of Newfoundland. They are actually within sight of shore. Naturally, we're attacking them whenever we can find them. So are the planes of the Air Force Coastal Command." That disclosure is quoted from Canadian Navy Minister MacDonald. Although Navy communiqués are as cautious in Canada as they usually are in this country, MacDonald went on to reveal that two Nazi U-boats were attacked recently when discovered in Belle Isle Strait, where the northern mouth of the St. Lawrence River empties into the Atlantic. This is about 400 miles from the site of the United States Defense Base on the south coast of Newfoundland. One of the subs was engaged by a corvette, and the Canadians think they may have destroyed it. The other was attacked by a Canadian coastal patrol plane. MacDonald warned that there are many other U-boats now operating between Belle Isle Strait and Iceland, and still others along the southern route for convoys carrying American war supplies to Britain. Other news involving defense of this hemisphere was made in our own capital today. Albert Warner reports, we take you now to Washington.
A joint program of industrial production by the United States and Canada to outproduce Hitler was planned today. As an outgrowth of the weekend talk between President Roosevelt and Prime Minister King, a committee is set up to represent both countries. Milo Perkins, Executive Director of the Economic Defense Board, is chairman of the American group. Already, joint military action had been surveyed. Now, economic action. The Treasury already is moving for a new tax bill. House Ways and Means Committee members have been asked to hold hearings this fall on a bill to raise between $4 and $5 billion additional. Featuring the Treasury's new program is a still higher income tax to be deducted at the source in payroll levies. A presidential emergency board has recommended a settlement of the threatened railroad strike on the basis of compromise wage increases for over 1 million workers. Members of the five operating brotherhoods would get an increase of 7.5%, and the 14 non-operating labor unions would get 13.5%. The additional cost to the railroads would be $265 million a year, and the board hints that the burden might be shifted to the public through rate increases of 5%. The president makes a radio speech tomorrow at 3 p.m. as he gives a White House greeting to delegates of the International Labor Office. The White House regards it as an important address, slated to deal with labor and social questions. Navy Secretary Knox urges the arming of all American merchant ships. He emphasizes that submarines now hunt in packs. It's learned that they have attacked convoys from the surface. In the Senate fight over neutrality revision, isolationist Senator Wheeler talked for 5 hours today, warning against a new expeditionary force. He gives his speech tomorrow. But the only woman member of the Senate, Hattie Carraway, demanded drastic revision of the Neutrality Act. She called that law a super appeal job, which invited attack. The final vote is not likely to be reached before Friday. Congressional leaders told the president that the House was ready to pass the Senate bill on Monday. Washington hears that the Japanese government is sending to this capital by Trans-Pacific Clipper a special envoy, former ambassador to Germany, Kurusu. The attitude of official Washington in the face of this development might be described as one of placid expectation, expectation of anything, or more likely, nothing. Secretary of State Hull said the new emissary would cooperate with the Japanese ambassador in a discussion with the State Department of Far Eastern issues. The implication from Tokyo is that Japan is tired of waiting, that it would like to force a prompt decision out of the protracted negotiations and a settlement on the basis of a free hand in Asia. There is official speculation whether this means a showdown. It depends on how much stock you take in the noise which comes out of Tokyo. There have been repeated periods when Tokyo's press and military swashbucklers have been saying, make an agreement or else. But I'm reminded that usually a man who is prepared to carry out the or else doesn't issue his warning more than once or twice. There's a feeling here that many in Japan appreciate the military risk of further aggression and also want to see how the war in Russia comes out. For more news on this subject, I return you now to New York.
As Mr. Warner told you, the reports from the Japanese capital on Suburo Kurusu's sudden and unexpected trip to the United States indicate that it's of vital importance. The China Clipper is being held 2 days at Hong Kong to make connection with the plane in which the special Japanese emissary is already on his way from Tokyo. Officially, the state of relations between the American and Japanese governments is called very serious. Beyond that, nothing official is said in Tokyo. Unofficially, the Japanese are indicating that Kurusu's trip is Japan's last effort to preserve peace in the Pacific. He's declared to be acting as the personal envoy of Japan's new premier and foreign minister, and to be carrying final instructions on that government's attitude toward the United States. It's hinted he may be empowered to declare that if the United States wants to recognize Japan's claim of domination in East Asia, Japan will not go to war against this country, even if we become involved in war with Germany. Of course, there's another aspect to this highly publicized trip by Kurusu. Like everything the Japanese government and propaganda agencies have done lately, it's being dramatized. The sudden plane flight, the grave implications of the visitors built up in Tokyo. All this is propaganda of a sort, designed perhaps to impress Americans with an idea that Japan is in dead earnest about her efforts to reach a settlement of her difficulties with the United States. And that's the story of Japanese-American relations. Developments in the past 2 days have spotlighted growing friction between the British and Vichy government of Marshal Pétain. Yesterday, Vichy protested formally to London over the seizing of 5 French merchant ships on their way from Madagascar in the Indian Ocean to France. The British, who took the ships into port, charged they were carrying war contraband and were under German orders, and the British Admiralty asserted that such contraband trips had been continuous and Britain was determined to stop them. A Vichy announcement came back today with the charge that the British Navy has sunk or seized 800,000 tons of French shipping since the armistice was signed with Germany in June of last year, 200,000 tons alone since last May. And a few hours ago, Vichy put out another story, this time the charge that a British plane had landed 3 French parachutists on French soil, and another British plane had been captured on the ground in the same district. According to Vichy, the second plane was loaded with propaganda leaflets rallying Frenchmen to the cause of General de Gaulle, leader of the Free French. It's stated the British crew of the plane is being held. This is the first mention from Vichy that parachute troops, either Free French or British, have been landed anywhere in France. Now, as a postscript, the British press service in Washington announced tonight that 19 Americans en route to Britain for service in the Civilian Technical Corps of the RAF are missing from a ship which is presumed to have been sunk in the Atlantic. And that's the world today.
This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.